All right, guys, welcome to the next episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Today we have with us special guest, IFBB Pro, Brittany Larson. Of course, we've got Skip Hill, S2H. I'm Scott McNally. This show is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for additional savings. We got a bunch of stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about Brittany turning pro. We're going to talk about fat loading. We're going to talk about an odd training split, acne cures. We're going to talk about... A cat that's shitting in the sink. Skip's got all, he's the cat whisperer now. So we're gonna, all cat questions, please direct to Skip here on the show. Plus, we're gonna talk about some hair removal. So yeah, that's all coming up on this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Stay tuned.
ADVICES Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for informational and educational purposes only. Kids, don't try any of this at home.
Hey, let me give you this replay I got one night. It's 1 a.m. I think I'm overheating. What should I do? My ankles are all swollen.
Don't laugh at him.
Hey, person, what's the temperature outside? It's like 26. Go lay on your porch and shut up. Go lay on your porch and
no
shut
shit.
Up.
Goddamn, I'm glad y'all set it off. Used to be hard, now you just went and saw Bert. You was down with the AK. And now I see you on a video with Mitchell Lake, looking like straight.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is Skip Hill. S2H will be with us soon. New IFBB Pro, Brittany Larson, is joining us. Special guest. She's going to tell us all about her pro victory, or her pro qualifying victory. Is that, did I say that right? I don't even know, but I think people know what I mean. She's a pro, damn it. That's all that really matters.
That's all that matters.
What? Yeah. So, hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Hey, friends.
Oh, look, we got S2H back.
He jumped in.
Yes.
I've just been sitting here waiting for y'all, and y'all cut me out.
Right.
Well, we all can see each other. We can't see you, so can't sit here.
Can't see him anyway, so, you know.
I'm here.
The enigmatic S2H.
Hey, y'all saw me at first. I let myself slide in the screen. Now I got to hide.
I know. It was awesome.
What's going on, guys? To start this out, Skip, tell us about Brittany. You've worked with her. Just give us an intro, Skip. This is your job. Basically, introduce us to your friend.
Well, this could go on for a while, so I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version. First, take a long, hard look at Brittany real quick. This is Brittany. Viking hat, Viking hat, or not.
She de-Vikinged.
Sword, trophy, Golden Girls t-shirt. And, I mean, you can't do a show without a Tyrannosaurus Rex skeleton behind you with nunchucks.
Where do you get a skeleton like that? That's my, I want to know this now, you know?
My husband, Amazon or Walmart or wherever. My husband, he's wild, y'all. If there's something out there that I need or anything, if he just wants to joke around or make me look radically amazing, he'll find it. And nice. It's on our doorstep in 2 days.
It's on your what?
And on your doorstep in 2 days. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
We worked together for a little while. We've known each other for a while. She's a highly recommended, comes highly recommended, Team Skip approved trainer.
No.
And she teamed up. I mean, her and I are tight. You know, we go back. She's fam. But she did hook up with Cliff Wilson. They killed it for the last couple shows. And the results, IFBB Pro, new IFBB Pro, Brittany Larson, which Britt. Is pretty cool to see.
Britt, how, what show did you turn pro at?
Me?
Yeah. No, the other Britt.
USA.
And no, the other pro. You're the only pro. You're the only pro here with us. Now that none of us have made it. So at USA's, how was the competition there?
Oh my gosh, everything was like awesome. Like all the girls were nice. Like I didn't have any bad experiences. I got attacked by grasshoppers. Vegas, you know Vegas grasshoppers. Whatever. What?
Is that a thing?
Have you been to Vegas?
Yeah. A couple times.
Did you not get attacked by grasshoppers?
He doesn't even know what to say.
I don't. I'm lost here. Is this a joke that I don't get?
No, this is real life. I got attacked by grasshoppers.
Huh, really?
All right. Well, anyway.
Okay.
The show ran, like, awesome. Everyone, like, everything was awesome there. Like, if it's the best show I've been to. Can I say that? Are there going to be people mad at me?
I don't think so. I mean, no, plus you're partial. You had a great experience.
I didn't say it was the best show because you turned pro. I mean, it could have been a shitty show, but the outcome was so awesome. They could be like, yeah, she's just saying that because now she's so happy.
I think it'd be the best show if I turned pro. You know
you're
what I mean?
Damn right. It would be my favorite.
Yeah. Because Nationals, they were cool too. And the show I did in Florida, whenever you came, like, that was cool too. So, yeah, I mean, you know.
She's kind of easy to get along with, though. She makes friends, surprisingly, quite easily.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, we met at the Arnold Classic this past year. We did a few laps around the expo, plus Brittany asked some questions at the live podcast meetup that we had. So that was badass. I knew it from that moment because, like, you took the mic to ask a question and you just, like, you were on. And I knew, like, oh, we got to bring Brittany on. So I think this is a great opportunity. This is a great idea, Skip.
Thank you.
All my idea.
Oh, yeah.
I get credit for all the brilliant ideas.
How long have you been competing for, Brittany?
Let's see. So, started competing. My first show was in 2013. I finished chemo in, when I say finished, I quit chemo in May 2013. And then I got on stage in October. And then, yeah.
You did chemo, and then you competed the same year?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Wow, that's intense.
I guess. Yeah.
You know, but for those listeners though who don't know your background, you might want to throw a little bit of a kind of a, and I say only Cliff Notes version, only because it's pretty extensive. But if people don't know, it's pretty impressive, the shit. I mean, getting a pro card is one thing, and competing at a high level is one thing, but there's a couple hurdles here.
So let's see what you see now, I guess, like, half of my face is pretty numb and my speech and stuff goes out. I had a stroke in March, and so I had to, like, relearn. I was out of the gym for a while. I had to relearn how to, like, move and just get that mind muscle connection.
Wait, this March?
Yeah, like right after I met you.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But all of that was because of I have lupus and multiple sclerosis and oh my goodness, there's another one. But, you know, basically I have the genetic lottery. So back in March, like I met you, and then so my memory is kind of shoddy now with some things. But I was just, like, getting ready to go to sleep or whatever. And I was hanging out on the couch and I was, my husband's, he was deployed at the time, and I started getting this really bad headache, and, like, I can feel, epilepsy is the other thing I have. And, like, I can feel when I have, like, seizure activity and stuff. So, like, I know kind of what to do. But I was going to, like, I was, like, chilling on the couch, and then my arm started doing, like, this weird thing.
Huh.
And I thought it was funny at first, and so I went to get my phone to record it. To
be no, like, kidding.
Yeah, I was like, what the fuck? Like, okay, this is blah. And then, like, I go to, like, move, and it just, like, went all the way up.
Oh,
and,
God.
It was terrifying. I fell on the ground. Well, I fell, like, over on my little dog. And
is your dog okay?
She's cool.
Okay.
She was crying. She's cool. So, and it was just like my mind, I didn't go unconscious. Like, I just didn't have any control of anything. And it got, like, into my lungs or something where it was, like, suffocating me. And it was terrifying. And, like, I peed on my dog, and it was terrible. and I was on the ground for 17 minutes. And I got up and I was just like really just like out of it, done. Went to the hospital. And the doctor, he was like, you're having like this is a stroke. And I was like, I had a seizure, but like, I couldn't really like, you know, like say it all. So yeah, like they did like, scans and all sorts of tests and stuff. And it starts with an eye, the kind that I have, but he said like, it was a blockage. And he said, maybe the seizure, like it was, cause I had brain inflammation, cause I was supposed to be getting into neurology. It took forever. And so I blamed brain inflammation. And anyway, long story short, he said that the seizure, like whenever I fell, maybe it caused like the blockage to whatever that word is. But yeah, I don't know. Anyway, I'm here. So there's that.
Wow.
That's cliff notes. I'm sorry.
The reality is I think if people would have seen you, or if they've seen you do video, say over the last few months, you know, your mouth and stuff when you talk was quite, I mean, it's so much better now compared to what it was only a few months ago. And it's actually, you know, it's improved substantially over the last couple of months. So it was, you know, it's, and I'm sure you've heard it before, it's difficult to watch and difficult to see when you know someone and then you see that happens and you're watching them deal with it. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of tough. Obviously, it's not as tough as dealing with it yourself. But to see such a, and look, in the bigger picture, I want to make this clear, and I'm sure that Brittany would agree. You know, the pro card is awesome and everything else, but it pales in comparison, really, even though it's such a huge monumental accomplishment. You know, compared to what she's dealt with her health and everything else, I look at it more as kind of the icing on the cake, kind of like a, here you go for busting your fucking ass when you could have quit.
Hey guys, we're going to take a brief intermission from this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear for just a few shout outs. Number one, I want to thank our special guest, Brittany Larson, IFBB Pro. Britt, thanks for being here with us. Guys, if you want to follow along with everything that Brittany is doing, check her out over at Instagram at Coach Muscle Nugget. She is a total trip. She's a lot of fun, super entertaining on the IG, just like she is here on the show. At the same time, she also has a very serious kick-ass physique. If you guys are interested in coaching, you can slide into her DM over there too. Number two, I want to thank our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. And thank you guys, everybody who has been using our code ADVICES, that helps to support the programs here every time that you shop with that code. I'm going to check out their oatmeal next. I'm at their website. They've recently, by the way, they've redesigned it. So if you haven't seen that, definitely check it out. And you can pick between the different type of oats that you want to get. I'm going to get the organic quick rolled oats because I don't have the patience for steel cut, but that is available. And I can't even count the number of flavors here. There's like four rows with maybe like 20 different flavors per row, maybe more than that. I am going to get a few bags, two or three, and I'm going to get maybe only like 2 pounds per bag so that I have a lot of variety to choose from because there's so many cool things that I want to try. I'm definitely going to get the Mom's Apple Pie, and I'm considering the, what was it? They actually have an oatmeal cookie flavor. So that sounds pretty damn delicious. You can add other toppings. You can add boosts and sweeteners, whatever you like. You can customize this to be exactly what you want. And once again, guys, you know, check them out, TrueNutrition.com. Every time you shop with them and use our code ADVICES, it helps to support what we are doing. And my third and final shout out is to S2H and Skip Hill. Really appreciate both of these guys. I look forward to doing this show. Every time we record, it is a lot of fun. And I'm glad that we can share it with you guys. If you guys want to reach out to Skip about some coaching, go to TeamSkip.com. You can also follow him on Instagram at Intense Muscle. And of course, you can go to the Intense Muscle message board, which is the home of DC Training. That's where it was born. So check it out, TeamSkip.com, and follow along at Intense Muscle. All right, guys, let's get back to the program.
Pack it up, pack it in, let me begin. I came to win, battle me, that's a sin. I won't ever slack up, punk, you better back up. Try and play the role and you're the whole crew will act up. Get up, stand up.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear, take two. We had a little bit of power outage there on my end. We're back. Thank you guys, everybody who found the show again. We already have a bunch of people that are tuning back in. Guys, if you have any questions for the show, definitely please post them up. We got a couple topics we're going to talk about today, but we're still talking to Brittany. You had a stroke. That's freaking nuts.
Okay, now wait a minute. I had the question and I was going to it.
Yeah.
Let me run this one question.
Cool. No, go, dude, it's your show.
Okay.
Your show.
Yeah, exactly.
As right. long as you show up on time.
Can't happen. Okay, so I'm going back to the you saying that you had normal, because I'm taking issue with you saying that you are normal, you have normal behavior. You told me, actually, I saw this on social media. I saw the pictures. You spent how long in that Love's truck stop while your husband was sleeping in the back of that truck? And you need to tell everybody what you did, because I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, so we left Vegas, and we left Arizona, and we were going to Texas, and we had been driving. It was like 14 hours straight. Bless his heart, my husband was so – I can't drive a stick. So he was driving, and I look over, and he's just dead. And we are in the middle of nowhere. It's like desert, like Pecos, Texas. And we pull into this random gas station.
It's Pecos, but go ahead.
Oh, no, it's wait. Pecos. Don't let him interrupt you. Anyway.
You know what? Pecos, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, that place is lovely. The people were lovely. So anyway, we pull in, and we're both trying to sleep in the truck, but my husband is huge and it's a little Tacoma and he can't sleep. So he gets in the back of the bed and I'm laying there and I can't sleep and he is passed out. So I'm like, well, I'm going to go in there and get some coffee, maybe some breakfast, you know, be a little good little wife and stuff. And then as soon as I walk in, there were some dudes, like they were like, hey, how much do you bench? And I'm like, I don't. And then, like, they started laughing, and then we were just cutting up. And I made, like, a bunch of friends, and, like, people were coming up and taking photos with me. And we were, like, finding each other on Facebook. And because they were, like, y'all's age, but they didn't know, like, Instagram, you know what I mean? Like, not, like, old fogies, but, you know. Just, so, yeah. And then, yeah, it was fun. It was fun. And then we met some random biker dudes that were from Texas, and I love Texas. Texas is wonderful. Everyone's so nice.
Well, apparently you are. You spent an hour in a Love's truck stop while your husband was sleeping in the back of the truck. The pictures on your social media were pretty funny because they just seemed so random. It's like every person who came into the truck stop that day wanted to get a picture with you.
You're kidding.
Funny. And I know you, so I know full well that you were just loving it and you were just nice and taking pictures with everybody. It's funny. I want to see how long it takes until you basically turn in to a jaded, like, bodybuilder, like, fuck you. Oh, God, they want to talk to me again. They want a picture. I don't think it'll happen, but I'm watching.
No, I'll go out, and I'll make my friends, and then I'll go back into my little hiding spot. Like, I don't go out. I don't do much. I have my little gym with my family there and our house and my dogs, and then I'll go out. And then people are wild, and I'm like, oh, this is why I don't go out, and then I'll come back in. So, yeah.
But, now, on that note, I will be respectful of Scott, and I will hand the show back to Scott.
Don't do it. I want you to – I've been waiting for the moment when you finally took the reins, Skip, and you find – this is your day. This is your day to shine. This is your day to shine.
Now, see, now I'm anxious. I was okay. Oh, look at that.
Who is this guy?
Yes.
Who is this guy here, Brittany?
Some random guy from the Love's truck stop. I don't know.
I picked him up, actually. He was in the back. I was like, oh, fuck yeah. Take him home.
He's from Pecos.
He's from Pecos.
Pecos, yeah.
You know what Pecos is famous for?
Pecans?
Cantaloupes.
Really?
Yeah, Pecos cantaloupes.
Dang, I didn't get no damn cantaloupes when I was there.
Little bitty cantaloupes. They're like little ones. They're really good. True. And Love's truck stop. What's that?
Aren't you from Texas?
I am. See, we don't have a Love's truck stop near me, though, but y'all could have stopped there. I'd have come by and said hi.
I would have said hi, too. Hello.
All right, guys. I do have a question for Skip, and I bet Brittany can chime in on this too. So this past week on Muscle Minds, we were talking to Dr. Scott about fat loading and the role that fats play in filling out. So, you know, we always think about carbs when we think about loading. And when we think about skip loading, it's going to be a mix of carbs and fats because you're not just eating like angel food cake or, you know, pure carbohydrate. We've seen your cheat meals, you know, we've seen the skip loads. There are some fats in there too. But I guess the thought was fats don't get a lot of thought, I guess, when it comes to carbing. We call it carbing up. We don't call it loading as much as it is carbing up. Talk about fats. Talk about how do fats affect the load and what are your thoughts on them in general? I'm sure that it must, first of all, it's got to differ from person to person.
Well, yeah, it differs from person to person. I mean, fat loading, there's a couple different ways to approach it. I mean, there's some people who just go straight that they're focused on, you know, a very high level of fat intake when they load versus something like shit loading, which is something that I, you know, it's kind of the method that I started with years ago that I learned from Zilla on the internet. And then, of course, skip loading kind of was born out of that simply because I didn't think that it was filling competitors out very quickly because I don't think there was an, it did for smaller framed and smaller bodybuilders. But once you got into the heavies and the supers, you know, it just took a while to get the amount of carbohydrate that someone that size needed. So I made, you know, changes and skip loading and that sort of thing. You know, I can't, and I'm sure Dr. Scott, I wanted to listen to his, how he explained it on the way, on the drive here to Michigan, and I didn't get the opportunity to do that. I'm assuming that when he, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that when he's talking about fat loading, is he talking about basically shit loading, or is he talking about very high levels of fat, trying to force basically, you know, the muscle to suck up fat or triglycerides? Is that how does he approach that?
Well, you know, it was one of those things, everything is different kind of thing. I guess, because, you know, he had mentioned it was maybe, I remember a couple years back and you were posting a bunch of your skip loads that were from like IHOP. And I remember we had a conversation about it and it was like, yeah, there is a good deal of carbohydrate in there. And yeah, I get what you're saying, because at the time you're like, well, I'm leaning toward the carbs. But there was probably still, you know, a good 50 grams of fat in that meal too. So it had to, absolutely, you know, it had to play a role then. And so we were just speculating as to what your thoughts were and how you look at fats in the load. Overall, what it came down to was, you know, Scott talked about it from a scientific point of view, saying that, you know, you take a guy who, I can't remember what the weight was, but we'll say, you know, a bigger dude, 260, and let's say that he could maybe gain, say, 6 to 8 pounds of fluid and glycogen through carbs alone, that, you know, through intramuscular triglyceride stores, you might normally hold 1 or 2 pounds, but you might be able to do like a super compensation effect and end up getting another couple pounds out of that. So now you've got that 6 to 7 pounds or whatever of water and glycogen. And on top of that, you're adding the triglyceride stores, you know, of an additional 2 pounds possibly than you would have had, which I can see the difference, man. I know what it's like when I've had, and like you, you know, I tried to start it out because I didn't want to ask you, like, you know, for a be all end all statement on how fats affect the body. I get that there isn't one, but I've seen it in my own life. And when I've filled out, I've seen it with clients, some clients more than others. You could take a guy who, and like you said, especially for guys that have more muscle, you know, you could just load carbs, load carbs, load carbs, like a clean carb day all day long, hammering the carbs, doubling them even, say, and still not get the same effect as if you had just added a little bit of fat to that too.
Right, exactly. So basically he was coming at it from more of a shit loading type. Which is what I assume too. Now, it's kind of confusing. Excuse me. It's kind of confusing when I use the term, or I kind of go back and forth between shit loading and skip loading, because I consider these days that there's two ways to skip load. There's a traditional way, which is high carb, low fat. And I say traditional because that's what I switched away from, or why I switched away from shitloading. Well, it's one of the reasons. The other reason is people were just eating anything and everything. They would eat, you know, 20 Hostess cupcakes and things like that. And I was trying to, how do I say, keep a little bit more structure and as much nutrition still in the loading process instead of having people just throw down complete shit. You know, they would say they ate like 4 bags of gummy bears and, you know, things like that. And it's not to say that things like that don't work when it comes to carbs. The point is you still want to try to get as much nutrition and micronutrients as you can out of these loads or out of skip loading. So the other method of skip loading is what I call moderate fat, moderate carb. And when I say that, it's not necessarily, you know, a lot of people would consider some of those foods like burgers and a diner breakfast to be, they wouldn't consider it moderate fat. But when I say moderate fat, moderate carb, I'm trying to just basically say that it's more balanced in the sense from carbohydrate to fat intake than it is the traditional skip loading, which is so much more focused on carbohydrate and really minimizing fat intake. And again, like Dr. Scott said, you know, some people respond differently. I came back to loading with more fat primarily because I was going hyperglycemic for the first couple meals when I was prepping for shows in 2012. So anyway, as far as the, you know, switching back to adding fat and that sort, I found that it still works incredibly well. There's a couple things that adding fat into a load does. Number one, it helps to slow down the rate that the carbohydrates hit the bloodstream so that you're not hyperglycemic or you don't run that risk. And, you know, like Dr. Scott Stevenson sounds like he was explaining, and I think a lot of people don't understand this, a depleted muscle will, suck up and hold fat. It will take fat, and it will, people think that, I even heard people argue and say that, and this is silly to me, but it's crazy sometimes the things people will believe or not understand, I guess. You know, fat can also be turned into glucose. I mean, there's that too.
Really?
So, yeah. So there's the question of whether, you know, the muscle is, and I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm pretty transparent when it comes to stuff. I'm not the science guy.
Sure.
You know, Dr. Scott Stevenson and I could probably go at it pretty good and have a pretty good discussion on fat loading, carb loading, and things like that, because he would be able to break down the processes of this stuff. I cannot do that. So whether the muscle actually takes in and stores triglyceride, that I can't tell you. I don't know if it stores the triglyceride or basically the fat, or if it's taking the fat and converting it to glucose and then storing it as glucose. I think that it stores the triglyceride because the process of metabolizing the fat to turn it into glucose wouldn't need to be there. It wouldn't need to happen because you're already consuming carbohydrate. Something like that would only happen when there was no carbohydrate. Like if you were just basically fat loading, like just fat and no carbs, and you were depleted and your body needed to convert something, you know, convert that fat to glucose. The other thing, and I had another point, and I think I'm going to lose it because it's right there. Hopefully it'll come back to me. But like I said, loading the fat basically as fat. When the muscle is depleted, I think a lot of people don't understand, a depleted muscle will just suck up like a sponge as much as it can and as quickly as it can. Plus, you have to understand, too, there's two reasons for loading, okay? One is the condition and to fill out prior to a show. The other one is purely metabolic from either, for me, someone like me and my clients, it's typically weekly, but it can also be bi-weekly. It can be every few weeks, which is kind of stretching it, but nonetheless, there's a huge difference between the two because fat also, even if you don't respond well to filling out for a show with, say, higher fats along with your carbs, you may well respond better to that metabolically during the skip loading or refeeds week to week or biweekly while you're getting ready for a show too. And that comes back to something you were saying, Scott, where you said that, I think you said, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, sometimes when you refeed, you can put a lot of carbs into somebody and they just don't even respond. Not only do they not much fill out, but it has little to no impact on their either their body weight, where they're not storing much more glycogen, or even metabolically. And in a situation like that, because fat has so many more calories in basically the same amount or volume of food,
yeah,
you know, there comes a point where you can't get any more food in your stomach.
Yeah.
So if you're able to say, instead of all of that being carbohydrate, if half of that is carb and half of that is fat, you're going to have more calories in the same amount of space. And that can have a more positive for a lot of people, not everybody. Sometimes it's just too much from a caloric standpoint. But for a lot of people, that can have a very profound, very impact, or it has a very good impact metabolically moving forward and getting that benefit from those refeeds.
Yeah.
Or skip loads.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of what I thought you'd say, something along those lines. Britt, what has your experience been with skip loading, having worked with this guy? Just curious.
She can't.
So, Skip and I kind of with this sometimes. Because clearly it works, right? Clearly he's the man, clearly. Right?
But not with this.
Not with autoimmune kind of issues and inflammation. Oh. So we give each other shit. He calls it his stuff skip load. He calls mine blip load. And we just give each other shit.
I see what you did there. Well played. Well played.
So it works, but not for everyone. But it works. You know what I mean?
So what works for you then?
Blip load, dog. You know, you got to, what do you say, Skip? You got to put your mark on it.
So, yeah, you got a brand, right?
Usually, I just stick with things like I do like the low FODMAP kind of foods. So like, just like low inflammation stuff. So like, rice is really good with me. So I'll just eat more like rice cereal or like what do I have? Just rice crackers or like things like that. So like more like of the good stuff, because like really like my own body, I don't need a whole lot. I don't need a whole lot. So, but I think I agree with him very much on what he just said about all the fat loading and everything. Because I know like when I would have certain clients and I would just try and do like a skip load or like the old, like the first gen skip load, you know, with all just like the, just high sugary stuff or whatever. Women didn't really respond to that, but it's, so going back to what he was saying about, you know, the size of your frame and all of that. So I think it's a lot more, it's difficult whenever you have smaller framed natural competitors and women. So I don't know where I'm going with this, guys. Stroke.
No, but you make some good points about the size of the structure, the frame, how much muscle you're carrying when it comes to higher calories. Because as an example, you know, a meal of, say, you know, 1,000 calories, just for an arbitrary number, is could potentially be too much for someone who weighs 105 pounds and not be anywhere near enough for someone who weighs 225 pounds. And that doesn't necessarily mean that those two people, like the 100-pound person, doesn't have the metabolism of someone larger. But a lot of times, that's going to be the case. It may not be the hard and fast rule, but a lot of times that can happen. I'll tell you where it would be interesting to see someone who has issues with inflammation, much like Brittany, but is, say, the size of Luke Sandow. Sandow. Because he would have a hard time filling out on foods that were real clean and were not inflammatory, because he's just too big. The motherfucker's just too big. So it would be interesting to see a situation like that, because I think really 99 out of 100 times someone like that just would not be able to fill out taking in those clean foods, which is pretty much how, you know, skip loading or even shit loading in the beginning happened. That's what I said happened early on, was the smaller competitors would fill out quickly, 4, 5, 6 hours, there'd be a very, very obvious change in their condition and their fullness, where the heavies and the super heavies, they didn't get as much of a dramatic effect. Obviously, there's other factors, how depleted you are, you know, that sort of thing, based on how you're going to fill out. But the point being is the size of the frame and the amount of muscle being carried, it plays a huge part in how many calories you're going to take in when you're loading or refeeding.
But your overall diet, too, going up to it depends, because so the body can convert protein also to glycogen. But if you're not eating any carbohydrates, let's say you're on a whatever, keto, whatever you want to call it, your protein fat diet, your body's going to be naturally convert. It's already going to be converting those to glycogen because you're not intaking any, you know, exogenous carbohydrates. So if someone's eating, let's say, a normal diet where they have a 30-30% split of everything, they're not going to convert those things because the body doesn't need to convert them. But if you toss it, the carbohydrates out of your meal plan, and you're on essentially proteins and fat, then your body's going to adapt and is going to start converting those at a higher percent. Make sense?
Gluconeogenesis.
Yeah, we talked about this once before, and Skip told me I was full of shit. I remember that, Skip. This is a while back.
Well, sometimes I just don't listen to you, and I just tell you you're full of shit. So that could happen.
I'll meet you at the schoolyard after this, and we'll talk about it.
What schoolyard? I got nunchucks. So where we go?
I'm not getting near her with them nunchucks and the dinosaur.
He's going to need that sword, too. Matter of fact, you might want to bring that fucking dinosaur for him.
Yeah.
No, Steve, he's staying here.
Steve.
His name's Steve, dog, yeah.
That's awesome.
You named your dinosaur skeleton.
Yeah, he was our Christmas tree. We put lights on him.
Nice.
I like that.
He had a little elf on the shelf in his mouth, but then he was like all covered in hearts and shit. Like, yeah. He was wearing a poncho. Josh was like, do you want the poncho? Like, so. But I will say about the skip loading, I find a lot of my clients would have mental issues. At sounds bad. They would have a hard time mentally with the skip loads. And one way that I coach is I coach with a lot of like eating disorders and all of that. So that's it. Just it also clashed. Mm. With me. So, yep. But yeah. I think like it's amazing to have it like to see how it works on both like all together and stuff. You know.
Yeah, I'm combining something like a skip load, which is not very black and white. Because you're basing what they eat a lot of times on hunger, and people with, you know, with eating, it actually would be irresponsible. It'd be unprofessional. It'd be irresponsible. It'd be lacking ethics, quite frankly. You just can't put something like that on someone who has issues like that, which is a very good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because if people are listening to you or listening even to this podcast who might be clients with you or battling with some sort of eating disorder, I could come across like, that you know, hey, we didn't cover that, or that doesn't matter, or that I would be in any way supportive of just, you know, having somebody with a situation like that and forcing them to eat that way. Absolutely not. That would be incredibly unhealthy. So I agree, and I think that's a great point.
I got a bunch of questions here, guys. And since we have with us Brittany, it'll be cool. We get another coach's perspective. One of them is a guy he's very busy. He is training a 4-day-a-week split, but he tries to squeeze it all around the weekend. So I think it's like because the rest of his days are really busy at work. What do you guys think about training? Say like you have all your training is 3 days a week, and what if you think if all your training is like say Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the rest of the week are your days off, so it's all kind of stuck together. Scott, we haven't heard much from you, man. Why don't we start with you on that one?
Oh, me? Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you this. It's the 3 days on the weekend, the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is better than the no days a week.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes you just got to make the best of the situation. I don't think when I was powerlifting, we only lifted 3 days a week. Now it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and it, you know, worked good. I think you have to be a little bit careful, maybe not to just think, oh, I only have 3 days, so I'm just going to murder myself for 3 days in a row. And, you know, potentially that could be, you know, an injury or something could occur. But still just train with some sense. But, you know, you could push it pretty hard because you got 4 days of recovery, too. So I don't have any problem with it. I mean, I probably, you know, I've been notorious in the past for only training 3 days, maybe 4 weeks, three tops. Maybe go 3 or 4 in a row and take a week off sometimes, or 2 years, or who knows, you know. But yeah, no, I think it's okay. I think you actually can accomplish a lot. I think people would, a lot of people think you couldn't, but I think you can. So that's all I got.
Skip, you want to jump in on that one? Have you ever had any clients in that situation where they train 3 days a week and it's just like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the rest of the week are non-training days?
You know, I don't know that I have off the top of my head, but I think I would, which doesn't mean I haven't, I guess. I can't remember what I had for breakfast, so there's that. I think a lot of times, too, it's what works for consistency and what you're able to do over the long haul might be more important, whether it's, you know, the absolute best way to put it together, or it could be a little bit better. The best way to, I think, assess a situation like this is if he just doesn't have any other choice. Scott makes a good point. I mean, it's certainly better than not being able to do it. So that's the first point. Another point is if you're going to gauge and you know, analyze whether it's productive and whether it's working well. And really, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. If you're progressing and it's working well, then go for it. I don't think it's ideal. You know, what you're dealing with is you're dealing with, you know, a lot of stress over 3 days, and then, you know, over the course of 4, you're just not using your muscles. There isn't much resistance there. You're not training. So I don't know that it's ideal, but yet I'll be honest and sit here and tell you I've done a lot of shit in 35 years, and that is one thing I have not done. And so from that perspective, I can't say that it couldn't work. Maybe it can. You know, I guess just do it, see how it goes, track your progress and see if it works or not. But again, consistency and continuity, that's really, that's a big part of it there. If he's able to do it long term and it works for him because he's just too bogged down with things during the week, then go for it.
Hmm. What do you think, Brett?
I think anything can be done as long as you have consistency. And I think it would be important to for them to really focus on their nutrition when they're out of the gym as well. But like, you can definitely get it done in 3 days. I think I've had clients that I've worked with that they never wanted to set foot in a gym. They only had 3 days and so gave a resistance band to work out and, some like cardio to do with it. And then, you know, focus on nutrition and she made things happen. So, and like, you got like, you know what, you can get a pull-up bar at home and you can bust out some reps when you're at home. You know what I mean? Just to like on your off days, just to kind of keep things, you know, activate and keep your mind in it too. So yeah, I think that's, if it works for you, then hell yeah, brother, go for it.
I feel like that's the thing that gets to me after I have a bunch of days off in a row, and you just said it, Britt, is keeping your mind together, keeping your mind in it. Because I feel like if I'm training on a consistent basis, then my diet makes more sense to me. But if I have like 4 days off in a row, it's like the idea of my nutrition seems, it's disconnected. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's funny that you say that, too, when it comes down to the diet and training. I've been doing, you know, I'm the old guy. I think Scott and I have similar years, though, under our belt. But the point being is, even after all these years of doing what I do, if I'm not training, like I'm off for a few days, and I'm not talking about just rest days, but if I'm off, I'm not eating bodybuilder food. I'm either 100% on or I'm 100% off. It's fucking pick one. It's all or none, bitch. That's how I'm doing it. So I can see where if you're on for 3 days and you're off for 4, if you don't have, you know, a lot of time and invested and under your belt, it might be more difficult to stay with your diet on those off days. There's a psychological component there. There would have to be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm like this last week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I just had a bunch of stuff come up, and I didn't go to the gym, but then I still stayed on my diet, and then I went to the gym Thursday, Friday, and yesterday, and then I took today off, and I probably will go back Tuesday. I mean, I don't really keep a really – I guess for me it's easier to understand because I don't really keep a really set schedule. I just kind of get in there where I can, but, you know, I still don't – just because I don't go to the gym for a couple of days doesn't mean I'm going to go back and go to Whataburger 3 days – 3 times a day, you know? So, yeah. I mean, some of it's up to you. You know, you're responsible for your own actions too. So, you know, you gotta stick to what you gotta, you know, stick to. That kind of thing. I guess because I've had weird jobs and different things over the years where my schedule's never been really that consistent. So I've kind of been able to bounce around more. Maybe if you're like Skip and you're, you know, you have the same schedule, or somebody has a very consistent schedule, it would be harder to adapt probably.
Right. But okay. So let me just ask you this, though, Scott, because you make a good point about, you know, whether it's your career, your job, or like you, you know, with the military and stuff like that, you may be limited on when you can train. But let me ask you this. If you weren't limited by your job or by anything, you just train whatever you want and you wanted it to be the most ideal, would you cram those three workouts into only 3 days in a row? I would say probably not. I don't think most people would.
Yeah.
But that's why I say it's not bad. It's just, it might not be ideal.
Yeah.
I don't think most people would, but some people just function. I mean, I can see where some people function on a different playing field. You know, they can do that. But I think most people like are more consistent and like a regular schedule.
Right.
But and I would say, but there's some people that probably have a regular work schedule, but they are more inconsistent in their training schedule. Not that it's a bad thing, but I think the part, like Brady said, the diet's very important, and it's a conscious decision to eat poorly. Okay, for the most part.
Sure.
So even if you're not able to go to the gym consistently, you can consistently control your diet for the most part, even if you have a weird schedule. So, you know, that's something that's on that's on the individual, I would say, in most cases.
So just so I understand, when you got really, really fat, it was your fault. Are you owning it?
No, actually, it was Scott McNally's fault. But that's a whole other story. he was my coach at the time. Well, what happened was I got really good at Golden Tee, that bar game, and that just led me astray. Find which time it was, but the first time was due to injury, and then Budweiser and I got involved together on a long-term dating program.
They sponsored you for several years, from what I understand.
Buffalo Wild Wings. I was on the Golden Tee National Championship team.
Yeah. That's pretty good, though. The Golden Tee reference. I don't know if you guys get that.
I don't know what that is. Brittany, do you know what that is?
It's a video game.
It's the best bar video game ever.
Did you know that, Brittany?
Yeah, my dad used to play it at the gas station.
I'm the only one that didn't know then.
At the Loves.
Yes, at the Loves. Yeah.
When I went to the World Championship, I was 320.
Wow.
Every Golden Tee World Championship. That's fucking awesome.
I hadn't seen my feet in like a year. I'm like, where do you go? But, hey, I went from 320 to 190 in like a year.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, were you happy to see your pee again?
Well, not really.
No,
no, I tried.
Next topic.
That reminded me of something else, Skip, because I was trying to wrap my head around. You know, we're talking about things that are maybe not ideal, not what we're used to. Still, like for the longest time, you did one thing in your training that I've always been like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. And that was that you trained fasted at a period of time, that you woke up in the morning, you went straight to the gym, trained fasted. And that was something like, oh, I never understood that quite. But I've thought about it. I heard somebody else talking about it on another podcast. It wasn't bodybuilding related. It was just fitness. And they were saying, it was a personal trainer. And he was saying that in situations like that, he's had people that have to do that out of necessity, load up on more carbs before bed so that they have like more food at night so that they wake up and they're like more loaded and ready to go than they would be otherwise. Did you do anything like that? It was just something I personally was wondering.
No, I didn't. I know we touched on this one time before, but it's funny because looking back, obviously, and I think I said this before too, if I had it to do over again, I might do it differently. But here's the thing. Not only did I not load any carbs before I went to bed, but most people who train fasted will still admit, even though they say they're training fasted, they'll admit to using EAAs or like an intracarb or anything. I didn't use anything.
Huh.
And I'm just telling you, to this day, it was some of the best gains that I made. And I make them. Yeah, I didn't make them because I was training fasted.
You made them because you're on trend.
I made them in spite of the fact that I was training fasted.
In spite of
training fasted.
You know what? Just ignore Shadow Boy over there. I don't even know what he's saying.
Hey, he said it first.
I said it was because of the trend.
I was DC training at the time. It was back. I mean, I can almost nail down the years almost exactly. It was like 03, 04, 05. So I was still in that mode of, you know, I'm going to compete. I'm going to go, you know, to nationals. And, you know, I was still thinking I was better than I was. But I was training my ass off, and that was my focus. And part of the reason, the main reason that I didn't do it is I was working thirds, and I had a real, I hate to say real, because then it somehow takes away or sounds like it takes away from what I do. But I had a real job, to one that I had to actually show up to and and work with other people and that sort of thing. And it just, for me to get that meal, I would have had to wake up, have that meal, and then either go to the gym and get sick, or I would have had to wait an hour, hour and a half. And I didn't have that time in my schedule to do that. So I just basically, I tried it, and I just felt so shitty when I trained. It was so gassy, and I'd get halfway through, and I got to take a fucking doo-doo or something. Yeah. It just would not work. So finally, I got mad, and I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to train without any food. And it went remarkably well, and I did that. I ended up just continuing to do it for no other reason than it was working. Huh. And that's why when we're giving advice to the guy before, you know, about whether training 3 days over the weekend is a good idea, that's why it's so important to just – sometimes you just have to do it and just analyze it and evaluate it for yourself and see. And if it's going well, don't get greedy. If it's going well and you're growing, just fucking run with it. You know, don't be like, well, I got to fuck with this and see if I can grow and progress even more than I am. And then all of a sudden, you're not even progressing anymore like you would have been if you would have left it alone. Yeah. It just worked, so I went with it. Matter of fact, I only stopped doing it because my schedule changed, and then I ended up quitting that job and going, that was in 2005, and just went to doing coaching only.
Hmm. Brett, did you have something to add to that? You looked like you were in agreement. Have you trained fasted before?
That's how I do it. Really? I love it.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I'll do like carb backloading at night. And then because like carbs with me, they make me sick. So I'd rather just like sleep it off. And then in the morning, like I'm still like my stomach still isn't waking up yet. And so then I just go and train, and it's like the best training. And then I get home, and then my body's like, we here, bitches. And then we get the day started. So, but yeah, it's great. Like I'll get up, maybe have a little bit of coffee. I'd take like a fat burner or something before I go, and then water and protein after.
All right. We've got a general question here. Acne cures. Scott, what are your thoughts? Whether you've dealt with acne or you've had clients or friends that have dealt with acne, it's a legitimate thing that happens in bodybuilding. I think that a lot of us have dealt with it at times. What do you suggest?
Oh, me?
Yeah, any thoughts on avoiding acne or before the treatment?
I'm going to say this. I've never had a real big problem with it, but, you know, people that do, they do. You know, it's kind of one of those things you do or you don't normally. And I would say this, you know, there's Accutane, there's all this stuff, which I think we've gone over many times, which can do the polar opposite of what you want to occur in your hormones and stuff. One thing I tell people that a lot of people don't get, especially when they get acne on their back and stuff, is they don't wear clothes that breathe, and they don't wear, and their clothes are real tight, and they don't have, you know, good just clothes that breathe real and real looser, and you know, you have to wash more. And I'll tell you one thing, you can get these things called dude wipes. They're like baby wipes, but they're for dudes, I guess, because they say dude wipes, and they have this stuff in them. And you can, when you get done training, you know, you can wipe yourself down where you have issues with acne. And then another thing is just like, okay, when you were a kid, like 14, and you got pimples, and your mom's like, quit picking at them, you know, and you're popping them and jacking with them. Well, it's the same thing as an adult. You know, if you irritate that area, it's going to become more problematic.
Yeah.
So, you know, clean shirts. You know, when you get done training, if you're somebody that sweats like me a lot, you know, take your dude wipes out, do your dude wipe thing, put a dry shirt on that breathes well. And, you know, but sometimes environments like where I live where it's just really humid, I mean, you have to be more diligent in it, you know. But another thing, too, is when you get back from the gym, you get home, clean, go right, take a shower, clean up real good, dry off real good, and let your body breathe a little bit. You know, maybe don't put, if you have it on your back or chest, don't put the shirt on right away. Let the body breathe, you know, let the pores open up and all that stuff. But, and don't pick at it unless it's a real big zit, and just pop it good, you know? So that's what bite I say. I think the
bite it. Oh, God.
Prescription medical fixes for a lot of acne are not conducive to physique building in a lot of ways, you know. But, you know, it depends. But don't pop your zits. That's all I say.
Have your husband pin you down and pop them for you.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Britt?
All right. So, since I'm the autoimmune disease queen,
Come on with it.
I have a skin issue. It's they call it HS. I can't say that full name shit for the life of me. But basically, like, my skin doesn't fight off bacteria. So okay. If I have like or something, it'll get infected. It'll cause a burrowing cyst, which then becomes cancerous, and then they have to take them out. So,
holy shit.
Yeah, it's a real nasty thing. Got a lot of scars on me. But Papa Skip actually mentioned B5 a long time ago. And I take that. I take vitamin C. I wash, like, as soon as I get home from the gym, I'll wash in the shower, and I'll put it on, like, a brush scrubber. I'll do, like, a I have this stuff by Rodan Fields. It's like a teen acne thing or whatever. I'm a rep for that, all you suckers. So, but, so I will put that on the scrubber, and I'll scrub the shit out of myself, and then I rinse it off, and then I have, like, a tea tree oil spray, and I'll spray it on the back. But I used to soak in a bathtub, and I used to put bleach in it, and the doctor was like, no.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, okay, well. So, but yeah, that's my remedy.
If you have acne, you could take a bath in, like, Drano and bleach, and you'll never have acne problems again. I mean, you won't have any fucking problems, but at least acne won't be an issue.
And not even breathe afterwards.
Right, exactly.
Right.
S2H, he sent me a picture. It's been a couple years, but Scott, he might remember this. You sent me a picture, and you said you had acne. It was a picture of your taint, and it was actually condyloma, and you tried to pass it off as acne.
Well, that's before I found my dude wipes.
I'm like, dude, it's cottage. That's like cottage cheese. That's not acne. That's fucking. You need to go have that removed.
Stop looking at the pictures I send your wife. Damn it! I swear.
Yeah. I don't get acne. I'm dead serious too. I'm lucky. I don't also get pro cards. So I mean, there's that. but I don't get acne. I tell you what, I'll get like one or two, but it always happens, and I always tell my clients this. 90% of people are going to break out when you're. Can you see my hands?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of cool because normally you can just see my face, and now I'm going to talk more with my hands. So 90% of people break out when blood levels rise when you start, and when blood levels fall when you come off. When they're constant and they're level, there's not usually breaking out then. It's a fluctuation usually in hormones, either up or down. So if you are having problems and you're breaking out, and you know, you may even say, because this usually happens when people respond and say, well, when did you start or when did you stop? That's usually what they're doing, or it's only been a couple of weeks. So what you have to do really is you got to kind of ride it out. And if that means you're coming off, you got to let your hormone levels level off. They need to stabilize. And usually what happens is when they stabilize, then you're not breaking out anymore. Now, if you're prone to it, obviously some people are prone to it, some people aren't. I've been fortunate. The only thing I had to deal with when I was a teenager was I was that guy who had a bunch of blackheads. I had to keep my face really clean because it was oily, but I didn't have, and my kids for the most part, other than maybe one, they don't get acne. We don't have a lot of acne running, and my wife didn't either. Maybe it's I wonder if acne is a genetic, is there a hereditary component there?
I bet there is too. I would wonder too if like I bet that some people are more predisposed to, say, convert to DHT, and some are more predisposed to convert to estrogen, right? So I'd have to think that would play a role. I had really bad acne, not really bad, but it was pretty bad, like on my shoulders and stuff, when I was about 18, 19 years old. And then when I started using gear, I started getting acne. I made the mistake of using Retin A, and I was getting it on my shoulders, and I was like, huh, I got a little bit, like a couple, I'd get a couple spots on my face, but my thought was, okay, this is like Accutane, and it's like a cure, and that once you push all that oil out, it's a retinoid, right? And it will dry the pores out permanently, so I won't have to worry about getting acne again. I started putting the stuff on my face, and then my face started breaking out a little bit more. But I thought, okay, I'm just pushing the oils out. So eventually this is all going to balance out. It'll be fine. You know, I just got to keep applying. I got to get through this. And like 3 weeks later, I had like my skin changed. And I had like just this, it looked like a chemical rash more than acne. And it fucked my face up royally. Like my skin was very smooth up until then. This is my later 20s. So I was like, I was already out of the woods. You know what I mean? As far as like teenage acne goes. And then it destroyed everything. So it's taken me years and years to recover from that. But here's the stuff I've discovered. Number one, it's scrubbing good, like exfoliating good, as long as you don't have acne. Because if you have acne and then you go back to Scott, you break it open. So, because like I would think that too, like you'd have that shoulder acne when I was like 19, 20. I'd be like, oh, I just got to get that really clean, and I'd scrub it. And then, you know, it's an infection of the skin. So then it would break open and then spread the infection, and then you get more acne. So that kept getting worse. I never tried. It was B5. I've heard that before. I never tried that before. Skip, you've seen that work with clients of yours?
Well, yeah. Acne is coming from basically underneath the skin, and it's an overproduction of what's called cecum.
Yeah.
And Scott can have fun with that if he wants. like cecum on Scott's face. Hey! Yep. Brittany knew that was coming. She was laughing before I finished that.
Can we stay mature here, please? Mature in the content.
How are you talking?
No longer G-rated. So what it does is it helps to cut the production, which is basically the skin's oil production, which is essentially what Accutane does.
Yeah.
The thing is B5 is, how should I say, much less toxic.
Hepatotoxic. A little safer.
Than Accutane. Yeah. So what you have is you had a lot of dermatologists, and this was 5-8 years ago, who would have a lot of clients try B5 even before going to Accutane, especially when they were teenagers, because of the toxicity to the liver that Accutane can cause. I mean, to the point where, you know, you've got teenagers who, you know, they were doing regular blood tests, getting liver enzymes to make sure that it wasn't too elevated. I know myself, I don't really like my kids that much, but I don't want them to have a failed liver either.
Yeah.
Because taking them to a dermatologist is expensive enough, but buying another liver from someone on the black market, very expensive. So it's just a better option to start with. Because if B5 can control it, then you saved yourself from not having to use a very hepatotoxic compound like Accutane. And it works a lot. It works for a lot of people.
Or antibiotics or all the other stuff that you could be putting in your body, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
You want to use something cecumless at all times.
Right.
Dial antibacterial soap. Yeah, that helps because since it's an infection of the skin, if you can get rid of that bacteria with an antibacterial soap, that helps to, you know, slow or reduce the spread. And then I think you nailed it, Skip, too, with, for me, with gear-related acne, it was fluctuating hormones. And I even found, get this, like Tren, every other day, I'd still break out. But if I went to the same dose but split it into every day, then I didn't break out anymore.
Okay, so. And that could be cutting to the fluctuation issues. You know, I think it's important to note, too, when you talk about the, and this is just my opinion, you guys may disagree, but I think there's two ways to approach breakouts. Like, acne that's coming from underneath the skin, I don't think cleaning the skin does much of anything. I think that when you have deep pores or you have oily skin that fills pores and that's what you get breakouts from, then, you know, astringent and things that clean and keep your skin drier, they can make a profound or have a profound impact on breakouts. So I think there's two ways. Basically, one comes from underneath the skin or the lower layers of the skin, which cleaning, it's not bad to clean your face. It's never a bad thing to keep it clean. But I don't think that really impacts it much. And then you have, of course, when it comes from the top and it gets in your pores and you break out from there, that's when treating the skin or keeping the skin clean and dry is of the utmost importance, I think.
But, yeah, I think it's both. I think it's both, because if you can reduce the oil that, you know, from coming out, you know, you reduce the amount of oil that you produce, that's going to help. But, you know, if you are producing oil, then you got to get rid of it, you know?
Right.
So I think both of them are probably helpful. And, man, I'll tell you what, another big mistake I made, I found Bactrim worked for acne. And so I ended up running Bactrim for like a year and a half, which is a really strong antibiotic. Then I ended up fucking my stomach up terribly, like really bad, you know? I destroyed it in my gut. So now, like, if I can't take Bactrim anymore, if I do, like 2 days in, my stomach will just get torn up. It's the worst.
My husband actually has this stuff called clenbuterol, and it's in a tube like Retin-A, and I don't remember why he got it, but I had one of those cysts that popped up, and he was like, let me put some clenbuterol on it. He puts clenbuterol on everything. And, like, it just, it bleached my skin, but it made it go away, and it was fast.
No kidding.
So, I don't, for what it's worth,
it bleached your skin, like what?
Yeah. Like, yeah, so, like, say I had a mark there, he put a little bit on it, and just, like, the shading where he put it on was lighter.
Okay, so, Scott, do you want to take this one, or you want me to?
I actually have some of that stuff.
You put it on everything?
No, well, not everything, but, it actually works. I don't even know what the hell it does, but it works.
I know what it does. It's called, it goes by its other name, anti-brown eye. Put a little of that on, if you're a woman and you're a stripper, you put that on your starfish.
Hold up, bro. Hold up.
Not brown anymore.
Just bleaching his asshole?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably so.
My dream boat.
Anti-brown eye.
Better check grinder.
Nothing worse than a stripper with a big, dark brown eye.
It is
especially the one that's on MT2, melanotan.
So, I've got clenbuterol. Could it be clenbuterol? We lost Brittany, I think.
Brittany's frozen.
She's frozen. Her and Steve. I see Steve in the background. He's not moving here.
Steve.
Yeah. Steve hasn't moved the entire show, though, which is weird.
Steve has an erection, I think. Oh, that's his hand. I'm sorry.
Oh, she moved.
She's back.
She moved. She's moving now.
I see clenbuterol.
Still not moving, though.
They have clenbuterol propionate is a corticosteroid used to treat skin conditions such as eczema, dermatitis, and a bunch of other stuff too. Yeah, and brown eye. It says that right on.
Dude wipes treat the brown eye too. Dude wipes. And actually,
the dude wipes B5.
Is he sponsored by them? I wonder. Do you think S2H is maybe sponsored?
B5 and dude wipes.
How much of a dude do you have to be that you can't use a baby wipe? No one sees you use it. Why not just use a baby wipe?
Because the dude wipes are thicker, so your fingers don't go through them.
Or just use two and write the word dude on it, and you're fine.
Dude wipes. I'll go get my dude wipes in a minute.
Dude wipes.
And I use them, and it's nothing like, you're crazy.
This next question is from Eric McCann. He wrote this on the thread here. This question has been brought to you by Dude Wipes. He says, talk about workout intensity. At what point is pushing good? And at what point do you need to pull back in a set, in a day, in a workout, etc.? Brittany, you're our guest. We're going to put you on the spot here.
Well, first of all, shout out Eric McCann. I got to say the word shitballs because that's, you know, shitballs, man. So, happy birthday. Dude, I can't answer this because I don't think I'm your typical lifter person, because I just go until I can't. So, I mean, I just go with my gut. I can't, because if I'm going for 12 and then when I hit 12, I'm like, ooh, bitch, I'm going to get 13. And I'm going to get 13. I'm like, shit, I just got 13. I need to do some more. Like, so I can't really, yeah. So next.
It's a difficult question to answer. And I think it's one that a lot of people ask because it's, how do I explain? It's something that people want structure around. They want a black and white answer so that they know or feel that they're doing it right. Like they're turning it on when they're supposed to, and they're not when they're not supposed to. You know, it's tough. I would just say that you turn it on as much as you can until you feel that it's holding you back. I mean, intensity is tough because it all comes down to recovery. I think most all of us can train hard enough to grow. It comes down to recovery. And a lot of times you have people who are out training their recovery. I would say you have more people. This is my opinion. You guys tell me what you think. I think you have more people, especially when it comes to competitors, out training their recovery than the other way around, than not training hard enough. And, you know, it depends on who you ask. John Meadows may disagree because I think his philosophy is that a lot of people don't train. I think a lot of people do train hard enough, especially when it comes to competitors who are really competitive and they're trying to climb the competitive ladder, and they're out training their recovery. They're not able to recover from their efforts. So it's basically working too hard because you're not getting the benefit.
But training hard compared to what?
I know. It's tough.
Train on your own and think, shit, man, I got this, killed myself. And then you go and train with someone else and they're like kicking your ass. And you're like, shit.
Sure. It's the ability to be able to really know what training hard is. And how do you define it? It's very difficult. You can't show it either. At least I don't think so. Because I think on the surface, visually, it can seem misleading. We can all open our mouths and we can all make noise, but really, it's almost, it's as weird as this sounds, or it sounds like I'm trying to make more out of it or be melodramatic. It's inward. It's being able to tolerate something that should be intolerable, and no one knows that really. Except for you, because you know inwardly what that feels like. And we can gauge it. You know, we try to on social media. We can say, oh, my God, that set, like, so-and-so killed it. Yeah. But who knows? Maybe they just act really, really fucking good. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen people move retardedly big numbers, and it looks relatively easy. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is. And then I've seen people move weights that are a third of that, and they clearly are busting their fucking nuts.
Mm-hmm. What if they're not nuts?
That's true. I did look right at Brittany when I said that, and I just thought we could be talking about something else, but you got my point anyway.
So there's stimulate, that. Don't annihilate.
Right.
Lee Haney.
You know, but that's, and let's argue that for a minute. Don't, it's very easy for Lee Haney to say stimulate, don't annihilate, when the rest of us are still climbing the ladder and we're nowhere near.
Yeah.
You know, accomplishing what he's going to accomplish. So we all want to work harder. I mean, when you're not achieving what you want to achieve, are you going to work less or are you going to work harder? You're typically going to work harder. So it's a very difficult question to answer.
I say if you're about to break a sweat, quit. That's the best thing.
If you're not going to just U-turn.
Well, unless you've got dude wipes, and then you can sweat a little.
Yeah, you can dude wipe away, like, you know.
All right.
Next question.
I'm looking around here. We did have one for Skip on the thread. This is from Chad Spencer. He says, question for Skip. How do I stop my kitten from shitting in the sink?
Let me go hang myself.
Your comments over there, you just need to mute your microphone or something.
Come on, put your forearms back in the picture, Skip. I know you got them up there on purpose. Come on, put them back in.
My forearms?
Yeah, you got them up in the screen like this. You're all trying to flex your forearms. Put them back. Come on. There you go. You may continue.
Are
you
ready to answer some questions now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, your cat is shitting in the sink for real. Look, I have five cats, and none of my cats have ever shit in the sink. You're not a very good cat owner. We can start with that. Two.
We just lost a listener. I saw the numbers go down.
Three to two.
Yeah. That guy's getting ready. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe your guy, I don't know what to say to that. I think he's kidding, because I don't think a cat would shit in the sink. Unless maybe, I don't know. Cats shit in kitty litter boxes. Like, what the fuck? I don't know. My cats are awesome. Your cat sucks. I don't know what to tell you. You do know I have five now, right? I have another cat. I don't want to get on the story if you guys already know that.
Was that the one your daughter brought home?
Yes, that's the one Reese brought home and it was supposed to leave. And then I kind of liked it. So now he's Mr. Awesome and he's staying. So there's that.
So what if somebody else brought a cat home and it had a sad story? Okay, let me tell you a story here and you tell me what you would do, Skip. Because we are out of questions here, by the way. So when I was a kid, my sister and I lived at home. She got a part-time job working at this place. They did like animal emergency stuff, like where they rescued cats and stuff like that. So there was a cat that got killed on the side of the road and its kittens were standing on the side of the road next to it. And my sister brought two of those kittens home. She said, you know, can we keep these? Yeah, see, Scott's all fuzzy because he has the blur your background mode on his thing, but because there's no foreground or background, he's just blurry constantly. None of us have pointed that out. But that was the story. So we got two cats that way. We got another cat because, as we were told at least, there was a kitten that was stuck in a drain. And it was one of those things where they had to like fish the camera down there and find it and, you know, latch it up and pull it out of the hole. And somehow we ended up with all these cats. If your daughter was to come home and she had these two cute little cats, kittens in her hands, and she told you that story that the mom got killed on the side of the road and they were just standing there. They didn't know what to do. Skip, would you keep those two cats right now?
Yeah, there's no question. And I think that's part of the reason I have three cats, because my daughters know me well enough that they're stupid stories. The other stories were similar to that.
Were they?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they went and bought the first two, and they were brother and sister, and they acted like they found them alongside the road, and there was a story and everything else, but they apparently knew that was going to work. And, you know, cats, I'm a cat guy. I'm not anti-dog. Cats are cute. They're fucking awesome. And I just like them. They're chill. And something like that would make me feel really bad for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if their mom was killed or something else, I think the cats are fucking awesome. I would take them in. I wouldn't want to because I don't want more cats. I like the cats I have. I'm cool with the cats I have. But then something happens and I feel bad for them.
So that Chad's question about the shit in the sink thing.
Yeah.
It's something that cats do to mark their territory.
Oh, really?
They shit in a sink?
It says Google, yeah.
No kidding.
No kidding.
I've never heard. Here's the thing, though, and I want to make this very clear. As much as I'm a cat person, there is nothing that I hate more than the smell of cat piss. If any one of my, and I will put Zuri right there. If Zuri all of a sudden started pissing and marking, because none of my cats mark or have marked and never have. If I did and I had a constant issue with it and couldn't fix it, that cat would go. I would not live in a house with cat piss. Now, I clean 1, 2, 3. I have 4. And they're not normal kitty litter. They're big fucking kitty litter boxes that are this deep. Okay? I clean them twice a day. And I'm not kidding when I say grocery. You know those little handle grocery bags? That's what I take out of them. It will fill up each time I clean them out, and that goes twice a day. I have no problem, zero problem with that. But if there was ever piss or shit, that cat, and it kept happening, that cat is gone. Don't do well with that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that, because I normally crap in people's sinks when I go to their house to mark my territory.
Right. If you don't like them, you just shit in their sink. That I can understand. Yeah. But a cat, I don't know. I didn't know that. I'd never heard that before. So what do you do? I mean, what do you do with it? I mean, if it's something that happens all the time, I don't know. That's rough.
He's a goo.
Because now he thinks that's like his spot, you know?
Put the kitty litter box in the sink.
There you go. There you go.
Basically, it's saying set the cat on fire. That's how you stop it.
Set the cat on fire. Oh, my God.
Hey, I got.
You just run. You run the kittens over. Mother's already gone.
People. I don't need any more white people to hate me.
I've got one more here. white people hate you? Wait, what?
Well, one of my friends. Okay, guys, now listen. When you see something dumb, you just call it out. It doesn't matter who's doing it. Yeah. But here's the thing: when it's your race, I feel like you're allowed to say "What the fuck, bro?" Like, so some of my friends in Colorado he took a picture, and it was this old white couple, and they were like, circumcision is the devil and all this shit. And it's like, don't y'all have better things to do? So all I commented was, damn white people. That's all I said, like, as a joke, right? This shit gets hit up for hate speech. I'm getting all sorts of people pissed off at me. So I'm like, okay, y'all want to act like this? I'm just going to screenshot you, and I'm just going to say, hey, guys, here's all the people that are having issues with me. Apparently, I hate you. So, and then it just kind of went off all crazy and stuff, and so now apparently I hate my own race.
Huh, how about that?
I'm just glad that you're here today to take all the racist attention away from me and Scott.
right.
Skip
has issues. We have a lot of ACLU emails that come in when Skip gets on his rampages. So yeah.
And then PETA
threatened to take me to court, but they never do.
And then PETA when Scott starts talking about Skip's cats.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But that's because I contacted PETA to harass Scott. So there's that.
I do have one more question. I think, and we've got a great guest for this. So on Bodybuilding Nerds Radio this past week, VJ and I were talking about the topic of hair removal in bodybuilding. And so I want to take a poll. And we'll start with you, Brittany, because I feel like females are the pros. You know, like guys, we didn't really start learning how to shave our legs until you went to go get up on a bodybuilding stage, you know. But females, you've been shaving your legs since forever, or at least most women are. And I feel like Brittany doesn't, just by the look on her face right now. What's your preferred method? What's the best way to like not fuck yourself up, end up with ingrown hairs, razor burn, all that?
I feel like this is a difficult one to answer because it depends on where you're at. If you are getting lean enough for a show, because that is the whole game. Because when you get lean enough for a show, you realize that you just have skin. You don't have anything in that skin that you can shave. So you got to like, it's kind of like, I think of it like a ball sack. You just got to kind of peel it and then shave.
Yep, that's what happened to me.
And so my husband says, baby, we'll wax your asshole. And I'm like, baby, I don't know if we're down for that just yet. So then he went and bought a waxing kit. He's like, baby, what are you doing tonight? And I said, well, guess we're just going to wax my asshole. I don't know. But
anti-brown eye at first. Yeah. And then that's like the first step. And then wax.
Yeah. Yeah. 1-2. Yeah.
Hey, definitely use the I use those girl razors. Those work the best.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Venus razors.
See, the Dollar Shave Club are better for me. Those bitches are sharp.
Well, when I stretch my sack out real far, it gets kind of, it has like bumps in the road, so I have to use the Venus to be safe.
All right, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Skip taught me this in a video. It was kind of long, though. It was a lengthy video.
I absolutely loathe hair. Hate it. It grosses me out to the point where half the time I look at my eyebrows and I can't even stand them either.
Wax them off.
Shave them off.
Yeah.
I'm dead serious. It grosses. Hair just grosses me out. There's nothing to me. It's gross. So I've been shaving my, honestly, I've been training since I was 14. I've been shaving my legs for, I would say, honestly, 15, 16. I had a falling out with my best friend. We used to work out in high school. And I'm not kidding. One day he looked over. We were in, like, political science class. And I said something to him. And he was mad at me. We were arguing about something stupid. He looked at me, over at me. He goes, well, at least I don't shave my head. Shave my legs. And the whole class, dead serious, looks at me and then looks at my legs. And all I could do was look at the one girl and go, like, you didn't know that. You know, I'm a bodybuilder. It was a cheap shot. And I was... He was trying to fucking embarrass me in the middle of high school political science class.
Yeah, that's what bad.
You should have whipped your sack out on the table and gone, look at these bad boys.
Yeah, just put it right on his forehead.
You got to keep up on that.
That sack, don't you, Scott? Yeah.
So if you use a razor, you got to keep up on that. Like you can't take a few days or a week off. You got to shave.
Well, see, I'm cool because I'm not like Italian or Greek. I was lucky.
Okay.
That my hair is relatively thin and light colored. At least my, like, you know, arm, like my arm hair and my chest and back hair, stuff like that. It's like even with my ears, like once a week I have to get in my ears because I see
That's because you're old.
I see old people and I'll see them from the side and like you see an old person from the side and their fucking eyebrows are like this. I'm serious. Or they got like bush coming out of their nose or their ear. You're like, what the fuck, dude? Really? Like, do you not know that?
They don't care anymore. They don't care.
Somebody needs to tell you. Holy shit.
I got one hair that comes out of my nose. It's like a fast rope, like a rappel rope, comes out of my nose and hangs out. And I got to get it like once every couple days. And I got only get those big razors. So I'm like trying to shove the big electric razor up my nose, and I'll cut my nose sometimes.
They have nose trimmers for that. Come on now.
I know, but I don't want to buy one. I'm cheap.
$20. Okay, whatever.
I stuck Nair in my nose one time. That didn't feel good.
I'm melted. I will not use cucumber, melon, Nair. I beg. Okay, so when I was real little, like my parents got divorced, and I was going through the whole growth changing and all these things, right? Starting sprouting some things, some places, and the girls in athletics are real fucking mean. And fuck you, mean bitches. If you look, see this video.
You know what? She's an amateur. Fuck her anyway.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. They're so mean.
But
anyway,
they're not pro.
That's right.
I'm not. I don't.
That should be your response. Every time you don't like somebody says, just go. You know what? But you're not a pro.
So there.
Yeah.
Mic drop.
So, long story short, I like beg my dad. I'm moving with my dad. He doesn't know like any of the girly stuff, and I don't either. I beg my dad, Daddy, give me some Nair. You got me cucumber melon. I put it down there, and that shit starts smoking and melts it together. Oh, yeah. And I start screaming, right? My dad's like, baby girl, you should knock down the door. Baby, baby. I'm like, no! And I'm like screaming while my crotch is like melted together. Y'all, no, don't.
Oh, I know. I tried it. It's not good.
Yeah. And it comes out in clumps. It doesn't all come out. So then you deal with the pain.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, it didn't work anyway. That sucks.
And the smell.
And then you look like you got a disease because half your hair came out and the other half didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I haven't done it personally. Mm-hmm.
So no Nair. Nair's not a good thing. Skip, have you done waxing?
Hell no.
No, I haven't either.
No, you know what? I wouldn't even do that on a challenge. I don't care what anybody says. That's just not comfortable, and I have no desire to hurt myself to remove hair. I shave once a week, and even before I shave, you're not really going to notice because I'm just not that hairy. So I can get away with doing it once a week.
All right. That's all I had. Anything else, guys?
No, I'm going to go shave myself.
I got some butthole bleaching and waxing to do, apparently.
Woo-hoo! Oh, shit. Yeah. Exactly. I thought that was Steve back there that went, woo-hoo! Oh,
yeah. He's ready to bleach.
Oh, we're making waffles, y'all, so.
Nice.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, guys, for another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear with special guest IFBB Pro, Brittany Larson, Skip Hill, S2H, I'm Scott McNally. The show's been brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Use our code ADVICES. Guys, we will see you soon. Thanks a lot, Brittany.
Bye, y'all.
I am a nightmare walking, psychopath talking. King of my jungle, just a gangster stalking. Living life like a firecracker, quick as my fuse. Vendettas of death, that's the colors I choose. Red or blue, cuz of blood, it just don't matter. Sucker died for your life when my shotgun scatters. Color. The gangs of L.A. will never die. Just multiply
color. Advices Radio Network.